From Taiwan to Cook Islands.
From the United Kingdom to the United States of America.
From Switzerland to Canada.
From Morocco to South Africa.
There is a Nigerian with something for the ears of the world.
Listen to Nigerians in Diaspora on Diaspora Discourse on Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
Diaspora Discourse, bringing Nigerians in Diaspora closer home. All over the world, every new day brings fresh news, new discussions, new dimensions, new perspectives, new paradigms. Listen to New Day Nigeria on Spirit of Nigeria Radio for what each new day brings to the Nigerian nation. New Day Nigeria on Spirit of Nigeria Radio, Mondays to Fridays, 8 a.m. to 12 noon, Nigeria time. After all, every day is a brand new day in Nigeria. For your mouth-watering, delicious and tasty African meals in Atlanta and environs, it's got to be Fat Fine Dining Restaurant. Our African soups, dishes and specials have no match in our territory. Order an African meal today from Fat Fine Dining Restaurant and enjoy that original African taste. Fat Fine Dining Restaurant is on 3565 Austell Road, Suite 1059, Marietta, Atlanta, Georgia, next to Austell International Farmers Market.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed, the authentic source of Nigerian information, positive Nigerian energy all the way. Okay, right about now, we'll be doing something a little bit different. And, well, definitely, it's about time for Diaspora Discourse. Yes, Diaspora Discourse on Spirit of Nigeria Radio. And today, we will be talking to Mr. Nnamdi Nwagboo from Australia. And Mr. Nnamdi is an English tutor, he's an English tutor educator, and we'll be talking about basically his life in Australia. Good day to you, sir.
A very good day to you. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for doing this with us. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well. And how's your day?
Very well. You're welcome to Spirit of Nigeria Radio. All right.
Thank you.
All right, sir. Okay, so well, first of all, I apologize. I really didn't get clearly. English tutor, you're an English tutor and educator, right?
Yes, I am an academic. I have been lecturing English at an Australian college in Western Australia for the last 13 years. So I teach English and literature.
Oh, great. Great. So we should expect some depth in this interview, right?
You should just expect a conversation between kindred spirits.
Okay. I see the literature coming out. That was exactly what I was referring to. Anyway, let's we jumped a little bit. Let me get to know you. Who is Nnamdi Nwagboo?
I'm a father. I'm a husband. I am a patriot. I'm an Afrocentric man. I'm an educator, as you observed at the lead into the introduction. Mm-hmm. I'm also a person who believes fundamentally that we are always better together than we are apart. That's essentially at the heart of who I am.
Okay, well, just like I expected, we are better together than we are apart, right? That was what
yes,
you said.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so
absolutely.
Let's have that. Oh, 2020. No problem. I have that. I have that saved. All right. Thank you very much for that. Anyway, so let's establish your Nigerianness. I enjoy doing this specifically because, you know, we are on Diaspora Discourse and we're talking to Nigerians in the diaspora, and you're a Nigerian in the diaspora, so I want to know, I want people to be certain that yes, you're indeed a Nigerian, and I want to know what part of Nigeria are you from?
I'm from Imo State. I hail from the Delta South local government, yes.
Okay. All right. And where did you live in Imo State before leaving for Australia?
No, I'm a Lagos kid. Lagos born and bred. Mm-hmm. But I did school across the country over the course of my early academic pursuits. I started off in Federal Government College, MENA.
Okay.
I was in FGC MENA for 4 years. Then from FGC MENA, I proceeded to FGC Okigwe. Did 2 years there, and then eventually came back to Lagos and finished off in Navy Town Secondary School in Lagos. So, and then did my youth service in Abuja. So I have, in a sense, fraternized with the scope and the breadth of
Nigeria.
And our people. So yes, I've seen cultures, I've interacted with languages and religions, and seen orientations and the ideologies that convinced me through my experience living in Nigeria and studying in high school that we are not a homogenous people. I proceeded to Imo State University, where I did my bachelor's in English education, completed my bachelor's there, and then worked variously in Lagos before I came out here to pursue my master's.
Okay. Well, based on how far wide you traveled in Nigeria, I mean, you were in Abuja, you were in MENA. I mean, you served in Abuja, right? You did the NYC in Abuja, you were in
MENA,
and a couple of other states.
In Kuje.
In Kuje.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. So let me ask, how many languages do you speak? How many Nigerian languages do you speak?
I speak two fluently. Yoruba, of course, fluently. I speak it well enough to pass as a native. And
really?
I speak Igbo.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I do.
Do you speak a little bit of Hausa?
It's smattering, and I'm ashamed to say that, because I schooled for 4 years in the North.
Exactly.
But you must understand the context of studying in the North, though. We were in boarding school, and consequently, we were removed from the community. I find that appropriating language is a direct result of interacting with the community on a daily, on a regular basis. Mm. But being in a boarding school, being in federal college, the language of interaction was English, which is one of the vestiges that we had from colonization, where we interact in a language that is not, you know, original or germane to us. For some of us, we even contend that the process of colonization was so complete that we even think in English sometimes, you know. And so that it's a full package of effects, I tell you that. And so I speak Yoruba fluently. I mean, if you engage me now, I'm sure we can rapport.
Okay, well, we'll do this off air. Anyway, you said something about the process of colonization being so complete that we even think in English. I find that interesting. I think it's just the perk of talking to, you know, someone who is in the line of literature. But that's a plus for this particular interview, and I hope to get more of those lines. But anyway, I want you to shed more light on that in the line of thinking. Please help me with that again. We start to think in English, right? That was what you said.
Yes.
Okay.
I said we think in English.
We think in English. Okay. So what do you mean?
Yeah. Well, for a lot of us, and I'm not saying this, of course, to generalize. I must qualify that. I do know. I'm speaking in terms of personal experience. And of course, if we are able to discuss with most people, you'll find that that's their default, you know, thought language. But what I mean by the process of colonization being so total that we speak in English was, if you know, from the advent, from our first interactions of what they would refer to as Western civilization, which I've always felt was a misnomer, quite frankly, because it assumes we were uncivilized before they showed up, but that's a whole other conversation. the things that were original to us, things that were particular to us, our language, our systems, our structure, the things that our forebears used to build the civilizations that existed. I mean, the empires are a matter of record, they're a matter of fact. From Songhai to Mali to Kanuri to, you know, the Yoruba Empire to, you know, the Igbos. I mean, that was complete. But with the incursion of, you know, Western involvement in Nigeria in particular and Africa in general, part of that process was to alter our reality. And one of the things they did was to begin to re-educate us, because we often forget that colonization was not just at the end of a bayonet or the end of a musket gun. It was also the social institutions, the churches, the school system. Mm-hmm. So we began to be taught in English. And I remember going to school as a child, and they would say things like, don't talk in vernacular. By vernacular, what they meant was, you know, don't speak your native language. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to speak in English. Mm-hmm. So we were reoriented. And now you find that we have essentially towed that line to the extent where we unfortunately can sometimes, and again, I say this very carefully, I'm not generalizing, I'm just speaking from a perspective of someone who is thinking his way through to an understanding. We appear to have elevated, you know, the belief systems, the ideologies, the lifestyles, the cultures, the patterns of those who have colonized us. And we've absorbed that, and we've put that at the apogee of what it means to have arrived and what it means to be at the zenith of life. Mm. And it's impacted the way we even think. I mean, I grew up also around, I had a neighbor when I was growing up in Lagos whose children, they were Igbo, but his children didn't speak Igbo. They all spoke in English, you know, and that's, if you consider that now, you will see just how alien that is. That's like walking here in Australia and my Australian Caucasian neighbors are speaking Yoruba and insist their children don't speak Igbo. I mean, it's just there's a discord with that there's just something fractured about that thinking. Mm. But that's what I mean by that, by the process being so total, that we've come to a place where we now perceive that those who have colonized us become the apogee, the zenith, you know, they're the height of what it is to have attained what civilization means, or what being quote unquote right and proper, you know, would mean.
Thank you.
Did you get where I'm coming from?
Absolutely. And you know, I took my time to really listen, because it's I should pay you for that enlightenment, but I find it very interesting.
It's okay, I'll send the invoice.
No, please. Thank you. But I want to believe that our listeners have been able to pick quite a couple of things, and I totally agree. And I want to say that, not to generalize, I want to say that most people are guilty of this. And trust me, you know, we've gotten to a point where, you know, your ability to speak good English and your ability to act civilized in the sense, you know, is now it is linked to your level of intelligence. You know, people qualify intelligence with your ability to speak very good English, and the language isn't even ours in the first place. So I think I totally agree with where you're coming from, and I find it interesting too. All right, thank you for that. Let's move on. I want to also ask about, first of all, why did you make the decision to leave Nigeria? And when did you make the decision to leave Nigeria?
Okay, I'm going to try and walk you through this. And I know I'm speaking in a public space. And in this day of outrage, where people tend to find things to irritate them, I will walk a fine line here. Okay. But it is what it is. We must speak our truth and be unapologetic about that.
Absolutely.
I slowly began to come to a realization that Nigeria was not for me at the time, because I had looked at it both from a historic perspective and what was then a contemporary perspective. Historically, we were coming on the back of people who were in Nigeria, we occupy a position that is enviable in the sense that we're one of the few African nations that wrestled independence without having to go to war. Mm. I mean, the Mau Maus in Kenya will come to mind. You know, Mugabe, love him or hate him, and ZANU-PF in Zimbabwe will come to mind. And I mean, we can walk the gamut, we can run the entire list. So I looked at where we're coming from as a people, and I looked at where we were. And I was growing up in a country where a succession of military interregnums had completely brought us to a state of dehumanization. And so there were certain things that were occurring that even when I, and as a young person growing up, I was just trying to understand them. They didn't make sense to me, but I was just trying to figure them out in the language of my mind. But I just felt that these things were unnatural. Some were funny, and some were much more morbid. So I'll give you the morbid one, then I can end with a funny, that, well, what I considered funny.
Okay.
All right? Okay. So a morbid example was, I remember at the time I was working with a company I won't name now because we're in a public space, but it was located at the international airport. Okay, so you can draw your own conclusions from there. And I was on my way to work, and I was at a bus stop. And at the bus stop, there were quite a number of us, obviously, at the bus stop. But there was a very pungent smell and just this pungent odor in the air that was unmistakable. I mean, you know, if you've lived in Lagos, you've been around open culverts and gutters, you know the smell of that. It's not wholesome. But this thing kept assailing my nostrils, you know, and we were all dead. Then we all turned, well, not all of us. I mean, we just about 40, 50 meters away from us was a corpse that was decomposing. Here is why that told me I had to leave. All of us at the bus stop acted like that was the most normal thing in the world. And I remember thinking to myself, when we normalize something like this, then I cannot remain in this environment before I normalize this. Do you get where I'm coming from?
Absolutely.
That was normal for us. We talk about these things as though that they are, you know, pari passu, like they're just, you know, the things that we should just, they just are. Well, they are not normal. They are abnormal. I mean, you're walking past people with mental health issues. We call them a Christmas be that, you know, and they're walking past, you know, there should be a place for these people, not fraternizing with other people, you know, where they get help, where they get attention, where they get the medication they need. I saw those things. And the more I saw those things, the more I realized, okay, hang on. This is not normal. If I stay here too long, I will normalize this. And if I normalize this, then I become that which I oppose. So I realized I needed a break. On the flip side, the slightly more humorous side, I was also at a bus stop. It's funny how these things happen around crowds at bus stops. I'm serious. I will apologize to you and to your readers in advance for what I'm about to say. Okay. I was at a bus stop, and one of those guys we used to call area boys. Yeah.
Okay.
One area boy came, walked past us. He had in his hand, it wasn't a full newspaper. It wasn't like two or three pages or whatever. But, and he walked past us, and just shortly after he walked past us, my man got to a corner. My man just stood there, dropped his trousers, squatted, and then began to relieve himself. Do you know what I mean? And then he opened the newspaper, lit a cigarette, and he was just, you know, doing his business.
In public.
Again, again, we all thought that was normal. And I remember standing there thinking, this is not normal. If the day I think this is normal, then I've become that which I oppose. And so those things began to reinforce for me. Of course, let's not talk about the police beating people up on the streets. Let's not talk about how every single home has become like its own gated, you know, barricade. Like we're imprisoned in our homes. Your bug light proofs are up. Your gates are up. Let's not talk about the traffic. So a number of things kept happening. I thought, no, I need a break for me. I'm not judging. I'm not casting aspersions. I'm doing none of that. I need to get away just so I can once again remind myself that the way that I was raised and the things I was exposed to growing up that kept reinforcing for me that there's a certain standard of normalcy that is expected of a society was not a figment of my imagination. And it grieved me to think that I had to go elsewhere to find that. but that was a decision I had to make. Otherwise, I may have ended up either the distended body on the side of the road, or an accident of birth could have made me the area boy that was, you know, doing his, doing his business. I'm serious. Just be real.
Okay.
So that's why I chose to leave the country.
That was wild.
Then, of course, I also thought, then I also realized, you know, I needed to go do my master's and also pursue my doctorate another time. Of course, with ASUU strikes, we all went to school, all that interruption. I knew that that system was fractured. So I thought, okay, let me go. And then I was, please let me quickly say this.
Okay.
I was raised very Afrocentric. You know, my dad used to teach us about negritude philosophy. We read books about Kwame Nkrumah, Leopold Senghor, Jomo Kenyatta. We used to have those conversations at the dinner table. And so I realized that there was, a black consciousness that existed. But on the flip side of that was, the unintended consequence was I realized I was being raised, while I was growing up, almost anti-West. So I also took it upon myself to come to the West so that my orientation of the West would not be the things that I heard, but the things that I lived and experienced. Because Westerners judge us based on the things that they see on their mass media, a lot of which, of course, has no basis in reality. Absolutely. Some of which does, but a lot of which doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't stack up. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to be that. I didn't want to be the guy who made an entire judgment of a people based on second, third-hand information and or just, visceral reactions to the things I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to come live among the people, which was why I chose to come to Australia, not go to the US or go to the UK. There were deliberate decisions on my part not to go to those places, because if I'd gone to those places, I'll have just fallen into a Nigerian community. I'll have simply exchanged Nigeria, the geographical country for Nigeria, the ideology and the people. So I chose to come to a place where there were, at the time, we just weren't here. So that's
okay. Well, I captured a couple of things. The day you think it is normal is the day you become that which you oppose. And of course, terms with certain things that you do not appreciate. Okay, I noticed your orientation. I said when you were in Nigeria, your orientation about certain things of life. And as a Nigerian who was born and bred in Nigeria, it is different. It is not strange, but it is different. Because people usually have because of our environment, so many people have the same thinking direction, in the sense that what is normal is what we do. I mean, what we do is what is normal, and what is right is what is strange. So, you thinking in a certain way, because I mean you give scenarios of you at the bus stop and you found certain things strange and everybody else thought it was normal. Exactly. I want to ask, and then you mentioned something about the books that you had to read while growing up, and then you discussed with your family at dinner table. Was it a matter of upbringing, or it was just something about you that was different, that made you see life from a whole different perspective?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I mean, you and I will quickly agree that we're both products of nature and nurture, so it's a not insignificant part of that was the nurture element. So my dad and my parents, God bless them, were very invested in the idea of giving us a worldview that was expanded beyond where we were. And so they exposed us to a lot of that literature. Now, but it's one thing to give someone that. It's another thing for the person to actually interact with what you present to them.
Absolutely.
So the other part was just me as the individual. I have always had a curious mind. I've always had a question in mind. And that became present in how I was trying, with the little resources I had mentally and intellectually at the time, to interpret and understand my environment. And so, but I was willing to do that. I was willing to do that because I didn't just want to say, well, yep, this is what we've been told. Yep, this is how it is. And, that's it, you know. It can't always be like that, because even biology, elementary biology, would tell us that that's not reality. I mean, if the baby before it's born is a number of things before it comes out. If it's a zygote, if a cell, a fetus, and da-da-da. If you come, you know, you crawl, you walk, you run, you know, so all those things kind of, parlayed into that understanding, right? So it was, part of it was nurture. The other part of it was nature. You know, I was raised that way. I was introduced to the literature. I was encouraged to talk about it. I was encouraged to think. And of course, going to federal colleges also helped have a concept of Nigeria as not a tribal definition, because you were at school with people from everywhere, you know, both the rich, the poor, the tribes from all over the place, you know, various, you know, different religion. You just interacted, you mingled. So you learn to judge people on the merit, the basis of what they presented to you in real time. Not as a function of, this misplaced definition that, this is an Igbo man, or this is a Yoruba man, or this is a Hausa man. Those things are very nebulous. Like, when you ask yourself really what they mean, it appears we're simply defining a generalization about how we think people are until we get to meet people. So my background had a not insignificant effect on how I saw the world, or how I attempted to try to see the world.
All right. thank you for taking us through that that explanation. Okay. All right. So basically, I usually say this when I talk to people, especially Nigerians in the diaspora,
yes,
on diaspora discourse, yes, especially. Excuse me. Yeah. I ask this question. What was it like, your experience moving out of Nigeria to the diaspora? And of course, you in Australia, what was it like? And, you mentioned that you consciously picked Australia. And at that time, pardon me, first question, when did you move to Australia? What year did you move to Australia? How long have you lived there? And then second question, the second question, what was your experience like in terms of the good, the bad, and the ugly? Now, the reason I'm asking this question is because I want to bring to light certain things consciously, if you are going to, be as open as possible, because I consciously want to correct the erroneous belief of Nigerians in the diaspora literally get there and everything is handed to them, because people believe that it's like, once you land from the airport, there's this Ghana must go, or there are Ghana must go of like 15, 15 Ghana must go of like money in different currencies that will just be handed over to you. Welcome, because the perception is just like, money is there. I understand it's a different environment where, the environment tends to cooperate with your dreams, and it works easier and faster. Yeah. Yes, we understand that. But a couple of things have to be put in place, and there are challenges, especially for someone who is moving there in search of greener pasture and also a better environment. So please take us through your experience, moving to Australia, and how many years you've been there, of course.
Yeah. Okay, so the answer to the first question, I came out here in 2005. So I've been here since 2005. So
okay, that's 15
this
years.
Would be 15 years, yes, that I've been here. And remember, I came principally to study. I came to do my master's.
Okay.
I have a master's degree in human resource management.
Okay.
And, worked in HR for a while before I went back into academia. And so that's, so 2005 first one. But now when it comes to to something you mentioned, you use an expression that resonated with me, where you said, the environments, can cooperate with your dreams. That's a very telling, very poignant observation, quite frankly, because that's part of the things that we're lacking in our country, where we, at least our parents' generation, they had an environment that cooperated. So my father used to tell, my dad went to, University of Nigeria, Asoka. He used to tell me stories about, being an undergraduate, and you'd have, in the commissary, you could come in and have custard, or you can have tea, and you can have toast and all that kind of stuff. And when you go to class, someone goes and makes your bed, while you're in class, and does your laundry and all that. I'm like, no, dude, we live in two different countries, man. Like, this is, which is why when Soyinka said his generation was a failed generation and people got upset, I understood where Soyinka was coming from, because he was doing a juxtaposition. He was juxtaposing how they grew up and what was available. And so I came in 05 and I came to my master's. Now, some of the challenges one faced straight away was not just the financial part of it. Yes, is real. But then there's also the emotional and the psychological. I was raised Afrocentric, but keep in mind I was an Afrocentric young man among black people. Coming to Australia was the first time I was very aware that I'm black.
Okay. But
that was the first. In the sense that when I came to Perth, now keep in mind, most people would know of Australia and think of Melbourne and Sydney. Those are the more popular places to be at.
Okay.
They're much more, they're popular. But I chose deliberately to come to Perth. And when I came to Perth in 05, Wellington is in the heart of the central business district. I could walk up and down Wellington, St. George's Terrace, Adelaide Terrace, and not see another person who looked like me. That's what it was. And so the first few sets of friends I made, African friends I made, were essentially, for the most part, people I just saw on the streets. You had to stop and say hello to each other because you realized there was just, a lot of you here. So you needed to really align with the community. And so psychologically that had its impact. That sense of being alone. And keep in mind, I came out here not knowing anyone in WA, in Perth. I mean, I had one of my closest friends who lived in Melbourne, who, God bless him, he gave me a soft landing when I came to Melbourne. And once again, he reinforced for me what brotherhood and family was about. And to be, and just within context, he is a Yoruba person who is Muslim. But we had met when we did our youth service. And so it was to his place I flew first. And he was the one that, received me into Australia and then necessitated my flying into Perth to then start studying. So that's a challenge. The other challenge, one faced as well as a student was, because I came as a student, and the reason I came as a student was I didn't just want to come like a lot of people who were desperate in our country, and I don't blame them. Let me be very clear. I don't blame them. The system is inhospitable. And so people just want to get out and go wherever. But I chose to come as a student because I knew that was going to give me a specified time where I didn't have to look over my shoulders in terms of my papers, in terms of whether I could legally stay and all of that. So, but on the other hand was you now have to pay, like in Australia, you have domestic student fees and you have international student fees when you're at any institution. International student fees are easily three times that of domestic student fees. Easily. And keep in mind, your visa will say to you, you're only permitted by law to work for 20 hours a week. You see? And so you had all of that challenges of how do I raise enough money in those 20 hours to raise my fees, feed myself, my living upkeep, your rent is there, your feeding is there, the purchase of your books are there. So that's an economic challenge. Unless, of course, you're coming from a background where, your parents are financially able to meet those needs, then you don't have a problem. But if you are like me, who came with nothing but a faith and a dream and a hope and an unshakable belief in self, you had to walk that line. And so then you get past that. Okay, then you're working, you're going to class, you're working. You still have to do well in class because maintaining your student visa is also contingent on how well you're performing in class. Because if you're flunking out, the school can cancel your enrollment. So you once again have to demonstrate a certain level of excellence, right, to still maintain. So there's that extra challenge to it. Then you get past all that. Then it's now time to start applying for jobs. My experience, again, I will say, is possibly unique to me, but I'm open to anyone else with a different story.
Definitely.
You'd apply for jobs that you're overqualified for, and you don't get the jobs. And then when you eventually knock and press and prod, people will say to you, well, you're applying with a resume that says Nnamdi Nwabuo, don't you have an English name that you can include? Because if you keep going with Nnamdi, the natural assumption is you can't speak English. You see? And so that will relegate your resume. But if you choose a name like, you know, I don't know, just off the top of my head, and no disrespect to anybody, please, because again, I say we live in an age of outrage. you know, you've got to pick one English name. You've got to pick some anglicized moniker so that at least the person who gets, you know, your resume can go, okay, oh, there's an English name here. So it shouldn't therefore surprise you that a lot of, you know, our people whom you know at home as one thing, when they come out here, they become something else. Like, I've met, you know, Nigerians here with some really interesting English names. very interesting English names. And so that, again, is another unspoken challenge you face. Then you go, then there's something else we face here when you do then get the job. So let's say you get past all that. You then get the job, right? There is also the other challenge of the burden of low expectation. You see, because of the heavy diets Westerners have been fed about who we are, for a number of them, not all of them, but for a number of them, you're not expected to do well. It's a burden of low expectation. So even when you do the normal things that you just would do, to them it's like this big thing. You know, it's like this, wow, you mean you can do this? And you might be thinking, well, yes, I can, because this is just part of the course, right? So there is that. Then I now have the added blessing of being Nigerian. And you know our reputation abroad. You know what I mean? And I call it an added blessing because that's just the only way I can look at it. Yeah, all right?
Yeah,
you know, our reputation abroad. Yeah, you know, you guys come from a nation. I had somebody, I was at a tennis tournament, the Hopman Cup, which they play here. A gentleman I'd never met, we just happened to be seated close to each other watching the tennis. I believe Serena was playing some person or the other, I can't remember who she was. I just wanted to go watch. And, you know, we got talking, and part of the conversation, where are you from? Which is always what people ask. Oh, I'm Nigerian. And the first thing that came out of that man's mouth after I said that, oh, you guys always like to do scam. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a guy who is sitting next to me watching a tennis match that I bought my own ticket for. We'd had a very interesting conversation up until that point. But once again, he reduced me to that, if you will, broad stroke stereotyping of Africa and Nigeria in particular. So there's that challenge. Then for my, you know, my people who believe that coming to the West, look, what you said at the start was really interesting, good, because when you said, look, the environment cooperates with your dreams, you're right. That's a reality. Okay, I mean, the system is such that there are things if you plug yourself into the system, the things that will come your way. That if you're applying and paying your taxes and doing da-da-da, so the things that work for you, you know. But for people to make this mistaken assumption that just touching down means all your immediate problems are solved, it's a very parochial way of looking at something. I want them to use the example of people we know at home, even going abroad. If you come from, say, because I'm Igbo, and I know the history of my people coming from the village to Lagos to seek their fortune. Just because you've come to Lagos doesn't mean that you're going to make all the money like immediately.
Absolutely.
No. You either go an apprentice to somebody to learn a trade, or you go, I mean, there are the hurdles. That's the same reality, that's the same understanding that we ought to have. It's the same thing. Unless, of course, again, contexts are different. If you're coming with a pot of money, that's fine. If you have significant financial support, that will go through anywhere, regardless of any environment you find yourself.
Very true.
But if you just come in as a person who is just trying to make their way through something, it's a very erroneous idea. I mean, it's a fallacy to think that just because you've touched down, oh yeah, in 1 or 2 months, this, that, and the third. No. It doesn't work like that. You have to understand the system, figure yourself out, put yourself in a place where you can then begin to kind of work through all of the challenges that come to you. And there are challenges. I mean, I've only touched on the things that can happen to you just directly in terms of work, school, and that. But just in general community, you go to the shops, security is looking at you funny, people who are shopping look at you funny, you've got to get past all that, you know. So there's a certain mental resilience. And I'm only speaking from an Australian context because at the time, there were not many like us here. I mean, I'm sure it's different in the UK and in the US where they are used to people like us. But of course, the US, I mean, current media, current events and happenings will tell you also how deep-seated, you know, those prejudices still are. You know, so that's their own thing. But you see, we still have to go through that, you know, as people who come out here to try and, you know, chart a course for self. Then you now add someone like me in my own peculiar situation where, as a black African Nigerian man, I teach English and literature too. I'm the only black lecturer at my school.
Wow. Okay. Right?
So that would put it in for the context for you we're talking about. This is absolutely beautiful.
And let's just keep it going. Let me touch the area of the general belief of what we represent, or who we represent as Nigerians,
yeah.
Talking about the fraud and talking about scam and talking about all of that derogatory assumption. Do you consciously put yourself in a position where you have to correct the impression, or like, take for example, being the only Nigerian in your school, and did you have to prove yourself, or it just came naturally in terms of correcting people's belief or people's understanding of who we represent or who we are as Nigerians, and that there is more to being a Nigerian than whatever impression they have about us?
Well, for me, it came naturally. Hello?
Yes, I'm with you, please.
Okay, sorry, it's on the table score. For me, it came naturally.
Okay.
It came naturally because of how I was raised. Again, you know, right back to nature. Came naturally just because of how I was raised.
Okay.
There's also a conscious element to it. There's a very conscious element to it, because I understand that, we have to be excellent. We often jest here that for some of us, we have to walk, we have to run to where other people who are not us can stroll to. You see?
Can you take that line again? I feel like, it sank for me, but for the benefit of others who didn't catch that, I feel like it is necessary. Please, can you take that statement again?
Yeah, sure. I said, for some of us, we believe, even though we say it in jest, but there's a truth to it. We believe that for us, we have to run to where other people who are not us have to stroll to. You see, so in other words, the expectations for us are higher. You see, we cannot be average and get away with average. Whereas other people who are not us can get away with average. And that is a reality now, but the personal element for me was, I've always been encouraged to just simply pursue excellence, and to pursue being the best at what I can be, recognizing that there are others who are better than I am. That's just a fact of life. But at the very least, within the confines of who I am, have I applied myself to the best of my abilities? You know, I was encouraged to do that. But in reality, we live in an environment where others will stroll to where we have to run to. There's a comedian, what's this American comedian, Chris Rock. He did a stand up one time that, and he said something that tickled me. He said, he lives in a neighborhood where there are only four black people, yeah? And he said in his neighborhood, there's Jay-Z, Mary J. Blige, himself, and Eddie Murphy. And he said, Eddie Murphy, king of comedy. Him, he said, I'm all right. I'm a decent comedian. Jay-Z, king of hip hop. Mary J. Blige, queen of R&B. He said, said, you know, the white guy who lives next to me? He said, he's a dentist. He said, no black dentist can live in my neighborhood unless he invents teeth.
Wow.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Like, I get it.
That tickled the hell out of him, but he was speaking of something that is a reality, right? Albeit in jest, right? But that's what I'm trying to make, that other people will walk to where you and I have to run to get. We've got to exert to get. We can't afford to be substandard. It's just not going to be accommodated. You know, and that's the, so when we even then get into these positions, we have to ensure that everything we do is above board. Now, I don't try to, my dear, I'll be honest with you, I don't try to, disabuse people's minds about Nigeria and Nigerians, or that I'm not a fraudster, I'm not a scammer, I don't try, if we do that, it would be just be too exhausting for you. Like, how many people are you going to convince?
Absolutely.
I can only control who I am and what I do and how I present to you. So if the person's yardstick of measurement is to characterize me based on what they are being fed by their mass media, well, okay, no problem for them. But I also reserve the same rights. So I remember, I must say at this point, because some people will hear me and say, oh, there they go again, playing victim and all that. No, this is not about playing victim. This is just, we're just talking about the things that we see and the things we live and the things we experience, right? So this is not that at all. This is simply articulating what one's personal journey is, right? So it's a reality of our world, and our role is to be intelligent enough to know how to navigate that. And to be armed with both the mental, you know, psychological and intellectual resources to navigate those spaces when we do, you know, get there.
And, you know, talking about, you know, not trying to consciously have to prove to people that we are more than what they assume that we are. And then you said something about it being mentally exhausting, which I totally agree, because having to prove to everybody at the same time, wow, that's a whole lot. But, you know, talking about that, don't you think that it's just a responsibility as Nigerians, wherever we find ourselves, that we just naturally have to be good people? We have to naturally just have it, so we do not have to prove it, because it is there and it is in their face at the end of the day. What do you think?
Yeah, I do agree with you. However, the motivation should not be trying to prove anything except to yourself. You understand? Like, okay, put it this way. What if I'm trying to prove it to somebody who's already made up their mind about me? What can I do? You see, so straight away, I've already lost even before I begin. However, if I'm trying to prove to myself, because I've set a benchmark for myself as an individual, as a human being, and even more so now that I'm a father, to set up something for my sons, for how they should model themselves. Now it becomes even bigger than my environment. It becomes bigger than my space. There's something far more telling, far more, you know, far reaching than that. Right? So if the idea is, oh yeah, I need to show them that I'm not a scammer, well, what if, okay, put it this way, yeah. I mean, we know that there are xenophobes and racists that exist, yeah, who already believe that, I don't care who you are, you're this, that, and the other, right? How do you prove to that person that you're not who he or she thinks you are? See, that's a lost cause already. Nah, but we can't control that, but we can control who we are and what we present. And when we do that, this is the concomitance of that. What we do then becomes the indictment on the way they think. That becomes the challenge for their orientation. That becomes the loud voice that questions where they are and who they are in relation to how they see you. If we be about our business, if we be about what we're supposed to do, if we're found in the places we should be found, doing what we're supposed to do to the best of our ability, beyond question, nothing else speaks louder than that. And let me be fair to living in the West. What you produce out here eventually becomes how you're measured. At the point, it becomes undeniable. So we shouldn't, and I'm not questioning people's motivations. I'm not questioning how people should think. I'm not suggesting remotely. I cannot arrogate such things to myself. That would just be a very arrogant view for me to even begin to suggest how people should think. But for me, I am just focused on ensuring that faults cannot be found in my pursuit of excellence. I say this being mindful that by very human nature, we are beauty and ugliness at the same time.
Absolutely.
You know, we are made from mud and we are deeply spiritual beings at the same time. So I know there's imperfection that trails us. We're a wonderful contradiction, just being human beings. I get that. But I ensure that all I'm trying to do is that you will not find blemish with what I'm doing. Like, you will see the essence, you see the true spirit of what I'm trying to do in how I apply myself. Ultimately, that becomes the monument by which you judge me. You know, so if I'm thinking, oh yeah, I don't want them to think I'm a fraudster, I don't want them to say, ah, dear, you burn out now. No one will burn out. Yeah, so the best thing is, we know who we are, we know where we're from. We know the things we surmounted to get here. And that was why I took great pains over my life to ensure that I was very familiar with not just Nigerian history, but also African history, where I furnished my spirit with a deeply profound understanding of the quality of the people that we are. So that in the discharge of who I am as a person, that governs how I function. I stand on the shoulders of giants. I remember the first time I met Chief Anthony Nahoro, blessed memory, was at the airport. And I remember walking up to the man and I remember shaking his hand and saying, thank you, sir, for moving the motion for independence. Otherwise, if you didn't do that, I'll have probably been the gate man of some colonizer in Ikoyi somewhere. But you did that. So those things are not lost on me. You know, and that's what I mean. Like, if we understand and internalize who we are and where we're from and the history that predates us, our contemporary history will not jaundice how we see ourselves, even though we live here. Do you get where I'm coming from?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's why I'm not bothered about that, to be honest with you.
Okay, well, I could literally ring a bell or snap my fingers or do something just to appreciate this knowledge and that I'm getting for free. And I absolutely appreciate all that you're sharing. And, you know, it just also brings me to the consciousness of going back to my root to understand so many things. And of course, I thank you for that. All right. Well, I'm looking at my
time. You're welcome. And thank you for the opportunity. No, please. Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thank you too. Well, let's still go on. I'm trying to rush because my time is like absolutely fast spent. But let's go into this. I want to ask now. This is about Nigeria, and please let's just try to, you know, rush through this. Do you have any intention of returning to Nigeria to give back to home? Because regardless of wherever we are in the world, as Nigerians, home is still home, and home is Nigeria, and we cannot claim another man's land to be home, irrespective of how long we live there. Do you have intentions of returning to Nigeria to do something for your country? Because if you really want to see the change, then you have to contribute to the change. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Okay.
Without a shadow of doubt. And I'll answer that very quickly.
Okay.
A resounding yes. Not only do I plan to do that, I'm already doing that. I'll give you an example. In 15 years, every business that I've set up over the course of the last 15 years, none of them are here. They've all been in Nigeria. So that I can employ people. I can stop sending people money and I can employ people. So that's one. Two, the day I retire from here, I'm on a flight home. I've made arrangements for myself. I have my place I can stay. I have things that are working for me. I am coming home. I need to be very, very clear about that. This is on record so people will know that the only reason I'll not return to Nigeria when I retire is if there's a war going on. So, I mean, for obvious reasons, self-preservation, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? You got to preserve, right? But as long as that's not happening, I know we're there now. No, we're there. We're there. It's not a thing. So everything I own now is in the country. This isn't just talk. This is real. And I won't go into details because we're in a public space. But yeah, that's just a simple answer to your question.
Okay. Honestly, like I mentioned, my time is fast spent. But because of what you have mentioned, I want to believe that you have a Nigeria dream, right?
Absolutely.
And I want you to share, if you do not mind, I would want you to share with us your dream, what you want from Nigeria, what you expect to see in Nigeria, the development, what you need from Nigeria as a person. And of course, you know, talking about what should I say, pinched your consciousness that made you make the decision 15 years ago to leave Nigeria for Australia. I want to know what you want to, if given the opportunity, if given the platform, what you would do differently to ensure that, you know, these things are eradicated to the barest minimum. I would want you to share with us, if you do not mind, and it's a question, hope you do.
No, not at all.
So
not,
can we...
Is not
it,
at all.
Is it possible to schedule another interview so we can get to talk about this? Because I feel like we need like another hour thereabout to, you know, really talk, to really talk about this. So if you do not mind, I'm asking a few... another interview.
I would appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very
much. It'll be my pleasure. Really will be my pleasure.
All right. Thank you very much. I would have to book this. I'll make plans and I'll give you a day. And of course, we'll agree on the time. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Mr. Nwagboo. But let me ask one last question. Now, Nigeria is going to be 60 next week, Thursday, 1st of October. Nigeria is going to be 60. Spirit of Nigeria Radio, we're celebrating 60 Nigerians at 60. 60 Nigeria at 60 diaspora icons. We're celebrating Nigerians who are flying high the Nigeria flag and shining bright the Nigeria light, who are making Nigeria proud in the diaspora. And of course, I have you on the list as the first, as the only Nigerian and the only black man in your school. It means a whole lot. And you deserve to celebrate. You deserve the celebration. I have you on my list. So that's for one nominated by me. Okay, we have so many other Nigerians that have been nominated. So please, I would want you, I'm throwing the platform open for you to make your nomination about Nigerians who are in the diaspora, who inspire you, who are doing Nigeria proud in the diaspora.
I believe you would have spoken to him. Mr. Wade Olaitan is a person that I don't have the words for how I can begin to describe who that man is, who he has been to our community, who he is to me as a friend, as a brother. He's one of those. And then there's another gentleman here in WA, who I will have to speak with him, but his name is Sydney Abiodun, who is a trailblazer in, you know, the resources sector, in Western Australia. His life is also, one of those that I look to be motivated by. But Wale Olaitan, without a shadow of doubt, remains a man who has resonated profoundly in my spirit. And, these two gentlemen, are people that I look to. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. And one last thing, I want you to visit our website, spiritofnigeriaradio.com. spiritofnigeriaradio.com. I'm still going to send a link to you personally and a couple other things. I'll send to you personally.
My time is fast spent.
And we'll discuss another interview, another day for this again. But I must say that you're literally a fountain of knowledge. I've learned way too much. I've written and written and written, and I definitely know that I'm going to write more when we have the next interview. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your contribution, Mr. Nnamdi Nwagboo. And we totally appreciate this that you have done with us on Spirit of Nigeria Radio today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. All right. So enjoy your night, of course, this evening. Enjoy your night.
Thank you.
All right, sir.
Thank you. You too. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Okay. So, That is it. Coming from Mr. Nnamdi Nwagboo from Australia, it was absolutely enlightening and it was interesting. I wouldn't say more than that, because if you've been following, you would have heard me say that we're going to book another interview, because there's still a whole lot of things we need to discuss, but apparently my time is far spent and we can't do that. I get to wrap it up here on Diaspora Discourse for today. I remain your Insola. Stay tuned to Spirit of Nigeria Radio. From Taiwan to Cook Islands.
From the United Kingdom to the United States of America.
From Switzerland to Canada.
From Morocco to South Africa.
There is a Nigerian with something for the ears of the world.
Listen to Nigerians in Diaspora on Diaspora Discourse on Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
Diaspora Discourse, bringing Nigerians in Diaspora closer home.